Hello, and welcome back for the 24th Metroplexity podcast. Means, in addition to being, you know, a sweet factorial number, you could listen to one podcast for every hour of the day, assuming that they were actually all an hour long, which does not seem to be the case. But it's nice in principle. Maybe speed some of them up, have me talk like a squirrel or something. Might work out pretty well. Got quite a few questions today, probably gonna talk a lot about Christmas, I don't know, we'll find out. Haven't looked at the thread at all, so if I get to some, I don't know, really inappropriate questions or stuff that's already happened, I apologize. We've got first batch from Gold S. Any hints on how to hit fish from the Lake of Fire? Well, I mean, there's really sort of two directions I could go. The question you have to ask yourself is Kinnack evil enough so that he could put that Lake of Fire there just to taunt us? Or is Kinnack evil enough that he would put in some horrifically complicated way to unlock the ability to fish in said lake? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's safe to say that I'm evil one way or another. It's just sort of a branding question, really. Is there base code for the Midgard player that hasn't been found yet? I don't believe so. Periodically, as new base codes go in, I have to add them to the player. But nothing that interacts with, like, the main sort of puzzle, right? Is there anything hidden in the homemade laser or dual laser? Nothing yet, although it wouldn't be a bad idea to have one on hand. Doesn't seem to be any interaction with the Poltergeist Spark in the Squatter's Refuge, oversight, or intentional. I don't believe that there is the type of encounter that works with, if that follows. So, I believe intentional. If there is the type of encounter that it works with in other areas, then it might have been an oversight. I just don't think there's one. A couple questions from Al. Actually, a whole bunch of questions from Al. I'm sure you're all shocked. Those, you know, repeat podcast listeners that Al has, like, an entire page worth of questions here. Actually, like, literally exactly a page worth on my screen. So, jumping into Al's. What happened to the student that was transformed to the Herald of Fire in the 2009 party? Was she one of the people that died that night? Was her body ever found? Did she get taken to the Utgard facility like Emily and Chuck? Something else? Does anyone know? She is reported dead / missing. Like the girl wearing the toga who became, caught on fire, so to speak, at the 2009 party. So as far as any official records are concerned, she is, she has been missing long enough to be assumed dead, as that sort of thing happens, right? But no body was ever officially produced, which doesn't, you know, of course, necessarily mean that Midgard doesn't have, like, you know, a body in a tank somewhere or something, right? But as far as people on campus know, she just vanished. Do strange eyedroppers have an unlock requirement, or are they just very rare? My gut says probably both. I guess I can look to tell you for sure. It does have a couple of requirements. Nothing too weird, though. Like, nothing that would probably show up for you as anything but rare. So it's not like you have to, you know, go to a specific, you know, get, like, a quest to play or anything. So, for all intents and purposes, just very rare. According to the Holocaust Cloak, Major City is going to go up in flames in just over a year from now, sometime during 2013. Please let us know where we should start the fire so the real life will plan correctly to match up with Metroplexity. I would actually be kind of surprised if no real life city, you know, hence some sort of major disaster involving fire in 2013. I mean, you know, there are just enough major cities. So, you know, if you happen to have a local city that, you know, you're getting worried, you know, it's getting into December, I wouldn't say no. Well, actually, I would say no for, you know, liability reasons. Don't set fire to your city. You know, if fires happen. I'm still stuck on the gunslinger content. I've tried not to do a bunch of things, not equipping any non-ranged weapons, techniques, and still no luck. Am I any closer to getting it? Yes. I mean, I'm... I would have to look through all the conducts to make sure, but I am relatively sure that they're all not doing things. I mean, some of them it's like, you know, like to get, just say no, you have to eat some food, right? Just so that you don't get closed system instead. There's some stuff like that. But that's... I'm pretty sure other than, like, you know, weird, like, nesting, right? Like, caveats like that. It's pretty much all not doing things. So I would... you sound like you're on the right track. Just keep in mind that... you are playing Metroplexity and not something where the devs would take an easy way out. We will totally, and by we I mean me, will totally ass ourselves in the name of consistency and stuff working the way that we feel it should. So, I guess try not to think too mechanically. Do crude ganger maps have any use once you found your way to the hideout other than paper mache? I don't believe so. I don't... Well... not at the moment. For the most part, after you get them, they're just a good source for paper mache. After you find the hideout. A lot of people in the game are described as being attacked by invisible etheric phenomena that they can't see. For example, Mushroom Man can help you attack the gangers invisibly. How come players never seem to be attacked by similar things when we are sober? That is... a question that I'm just not going to answer. it's not like a weird coincidence, really. It's a question of perspective. I mean, it's not that you're not being attacked by things, right? It's that you can see them. And sometimes sometimes other people can't. There are people that can, people that can't. Why exactly that is, I think, is an interesting thing to think about some. But as far as, yeah, the whys and wherefores, I wouldn't entirely get into that. I guess that's... sort of talked around that question after I said that I wouldn't answer it, but I'm pretty sure that I succeeded in not answering it, so we'll go good. Are the earthquakes on the docks related to the settling of the dorms at all? Well... I mean... yes, but not in, not in the way that you're probably asking the question. The dorms are not settling because of, you know, being built on unstable earth, which is being, you know, jarred by the docks, right? It's there's sort of a train of causality there that goes pretty drastically off the normal tracks to connect the two, but I guess not in the way that I would imagine the question is being phrased. Will conducts listed in our profile carry over to Old Town? For example, making Survivor conducts an Old Town conducts list. Mostly wondering if I should be trying to get all the conducts before Old Town rolls, or if I can continue to add to the list afterwards. It's an interesting question. Hadn't really put a ton of thought into that yet. The conducts list on the profile was not an originally intended feature. It was just people asking for it over and over, and I figured that it, you know, if I get 100 requests for it, I might as well. I did not actually get 100 requests for it, but it was like a dozen requests for it, which is more than enough to spur me into action, unless it's something that I feel is actively detrimental to the game, or just a retarded amount of work. I would say I guess we'll just stick with I haven't officially decided yet. I don't necessarily see a reason to split them up. Although, yeah, I think I'm fine just leaving them, but leaving the door open because I'll be thinking about that. So, the game design question. I have dozens and dozens of ideas for making games floating around in my head, but they're all about 5% complete. Any tips on how to get from 5% of an idea to enough of an idea to actually implement something? How did you settle on one particular idea and flesh it out? That is probably the biggest hurdle in game design. The hard part of game design, in my opinion, is not the idea generation, because anyone who has any interest in game design, right, has, you know, their collection of ideas, and, you know, maybe those ideas are better or worse or whatever, but most of them are fine, right? A lot of perfectly successful games you look at and you're like, this doesn't really have, like, an idea even, right? We'll just say, like, a lot of sequels, right? Like, a lot of them are just like, oh, we need another, I don't want to pick on Assassin's Creed, because I'm sure it's a fine game and I haven't played any of them, but, you know, we need another Assassin's Creed. It's not, like, you know, a grand idea, right? But it's still a fine game. People enjoy it a lot, and they make an absolute shit ton of money. Not saying that to justify it exactly, but clearly people like it enough to buy it, otherwise they wouldn't be making a shit ton of money off of it. So you don't really need a, like, the ideas part isn't hard. A lot of times you can have a very simple idea, even an idea that doesn't really have any merit as an idea, and turn that into not only, you know, a successful game, but a good game. I sort of rank things in that order, just because, you know, who I am. You can flip that around too. You don't need to have an idea to have a good or successful game. The trick really with the design isn't that coming up with ideas. I mean, you could sit down, right, and just list out, like, dozens of ideas in the time that it's taken me to describe my position on ideas, but is really filtering them down, deciding what you want. What I ended up doing with Metroplexity, kind of ironically, is that I didn't really come in from, well, I came in from a different sort of idea. So, I mean, there's, like, oh, it'd be cool to have this sort of game, it'd be cool to have that sort of game. Oh, this is a really interesting, like, mechanic, I could use this in a game. You know, I want to play around with this sort of idea. And I do those, like, sort of more or less daily, right? But where I came to for Metroplexity was actually a... more almost procedural idea, like more of an idea tied to a finished product, and I think that's part of what pulled me along. So instead of just being like, oh, you know, this is a neat mechanic, like the combat mechanic of Metroplexity, the techniques mechanic, I really like. I think it's a very good mechanic. There's a lot of neat things we can do with it, some of which you've seen, some of which you see, like, little previews for, and some of which you'll get to see more of in the future, or at all in the future. Actually, I figured out something with Old Town that I think people appreciate. There's a potentially a neat segment in there. You know, there's all of this stuff. Oh, what really pulled it along was that, I guess it's less of an idea and more of a need, and I saw that there was a need, at least, like, for, you know, I guess something that pissed me off almost, more than an idea, that there was not there's this sort of intersection of genres that I like a lot where cyberpunk and sort of not quite fantasy, but like, you know, fantasy-esque stuff sort of touch. And you've got a handful of settings that explore that. I mean, you've got Shadowrun is the really obvious example. There are a couple of others, but it's just this really cool spot, and I just feel like it's being underserved, not in like the, oh, I could sell a ton of these cents, but just like, it just kind of pisses me off. Like, it's like, I want there to be more of these, and there aren't more of these. Like, that sort of, it wasn't so much, most of the time when you're coming up with design ideas, it's like, oh, I've got this great round peg. And then you're like, that's a nice round peg. This was more, there's this round hole here, what do I put it in? And then I made the round peg to go into it. If that makes the faintest amount of sense at all. So that's what really sort of turned it around for me. And I guess actually with my completed products, like the more completed they've gotten, the more it's been like that. Like, when we were designing a system, the tabletop RPG that a bunch of friends of mine and myself put together, it was not a... they usually call it a... they call the idea process that led to that game. It usually creates a lot of what they call fantasy heartbreakers, which are like, this is like D&D, but slightly better. Because there's these things I don't like about D&D. Ours was a little more extreme than that. It was like, we've tortured D&D into being able to tell the stories that we want to tell, but there really isn't a system to do what we actually want to do, role-playing-wise. And so we, made one from scratch to do that. And that's the sort of, I guess, process that's worked out better for me, to actually complete ideas. And it kind of, like, it's a little funny because it also works out well in the sense that, that's how you should be, that's, not exactly how you should be looking at things if you actually want to sell them, but it's a close cousin to it. I mean, the first thing you want to do if you're trying to sell something is identify a need that's not being met, right? Like, you know, business 101. The stuff that I'm talking about here is sort of the artsy side of that, right? I feel that this need for me isn't being met, and, you know, if anybody else likes it, that's great, but if not, whatever. But sort of, you know, close kin. It's an easy place where you can sort of, like, meld those. And, of course, we have sirens in the background. Not sure if you can hear that. Pretty sure that nobody died. Or at least, like, got gunned down by, like, gangs selling Eclipse or anything. I think that the process of going from... I feel that there's sort of this process that gets sold as design that I don't think is accurate, almost. Like, I don't feel that designing things, and I'm sure that there are people who are perfectly good designers who disagree with me very vehemently on this, but I don't feel that the process of designing things starts with good ideas. I feel that the process of designing things actually starts with setting, like, that sort of need that I was talking about, sort of a universe that you need to fill. And then within those confines, you can actually do something. There's a lot of people notice this a lot, talking about Magic the Gathering design. But it happens with basically with any sort of dice, especially when you're talking about fitting into, you know, a larger whole. There's a common misconception that the restrictions that are placed on the designers restrict them. It's really very much the opposite. Like, to actually design something, you need not, like, necessarily, like, you know, engineering specs, right? But you need something to design. It's sort of like, oh, if you go up to an artist and say, paint something. They'll paint something, right? Even if, like, you know, that's, if you're saying paint something for a commission. And a lot of them, you know, and both, like, painters and designers, it's important to sort of practice it and keep it up to both to build up a stable of ideas and just to keep yourself in practice. But when I feel like when the actual process of actual design starts, I feel that that's built, like, there's some sort of foundation there, right? And the foundation is what actually kicks off the design process. I'm not sure if I'm explaining that very well. You sort of, like I was talking about, you know, round pegs and square holes and so forth before. It's when you recognize that you have sort of a task, right? I am going to design a game to fill this need to do this. And then all of the ideas you have flitting about, right, you can pull on them as resources. And that's really what you're doing when you're coming up with these, like, 5% done ideas, is you're just building up, ammunition, more or less, ammunition, building materials, building of heroes is probably a more appropriate metaphor. You've got, like, your 2x4s and your I-beams and your nails and your tools, your hammers and so forth, and you're taking them together and you're actually building them, but you're not just coming up with those ideas, is coming up with the materials, right? And the real trick is once you have a goal, actually using those materials appropriately, and the idea that all that you need, well, I guess to sort of torture that metaphor, if saying, like, I have this really good idea, it needs to become a game, is sort of like saying, I have this really sweet piece of lumber, it needs to become a house. That's just like, it almost doesn't connect. And I think that's where a lot of the problems you'll run into with just like generating ideas like that, that there isn't actually anything to do with them. And so what you actually need to do is, say, you know, I need to, basically fit some need for myself or for somebody else. Like if you're, working on a project with other people, even if, like, you know, you're working for the man, right? You're working for, I'm going to go with EA here as being the man. I think that's appropriate. And they say to you, you know, we need, I'm not going to say something quite as soulless as, like, Madden 2013 or something, but we need, you know, this, you know, a light sort of, I'm thinking Pop Cappy here because they just bought Pop Cap, but a light sort of, like, puzzly game, right? And it needs to be appropriate for, like, this age range and, you know, be sort of, you know, not, and be, like, engaging, but, like, easy to put away. It's going to be, like, you know, an iPhone app. Go. And once you have these restrictions, like, even if, you know, your restrictions are just, like, I think there needs to be, like, a turn-based, puzzly iPhone game. That's, like, you know, for kids, or, like, you know, for bored office workers, or, you know, for me when I'm sitting at the dentist's office. And you go in, and then that's actually when you start pulling in all of the ideas. You sort of, like, have the, you know, the house at that point. You're actually building it. And that's when the ideas come in. What I will say, sort of continuing to torture that metaphor, because I've probably talked about this for, like, half an hour or something already, is that much like a house, what usually ends up mattering isn't the quality of your best idea, it's the quality of your worst idea. And that, I think, is, I don't think that's 100% fair, but it's kind of up there. So the real trick is to get the best ideas, and don't be afraid of just wholeheartedly fucking yanking stuff. Like when you're going through in, like, you know, our theoretical, you know, iPhone puzzle game, if you're like, oh, you know, the resource mechanic from, I'm still on a PopCap thought train here, you know, if the resource mechanic from Plants vs. Zombies with, like, the falling suns that you, you know, click on would be perfect for this game. And, you know, you try out some other things and they're all just not working, just fucking yank it, really. Like, I mean, I'm not suggesting, you know, copying the entire game wholesale, although plenty of people have made tons of money doing stuff like that. I'm saying that just because, you know, to go back to the house example, you know, it's not, you know, you don't have to reinvent HVAC when you build a house, right? If, you know, somebody, other people have done these things before, and you are only doing a disservice for yourself, not cribbing their notes. Okay. That's, I think I'm done. Can we intimidate Saber with something we currently know about, or is there some unknown effect or item required to intimidate him? No, it should work now. Should you check for underwater zones for when the Ragman should show up? I'm not sure how many Dark Alloy UAs there are in Lake Metroplex. I thought that he didn't show up. It might be, you know, broken like you do. But no, he's not supposed to show up underwater. And you'll probably get really dumb combat messages, too. Let me, It's the sound of the database deciding when to get back to me. Oh, yeah, it is underwater. Okay. Well, that's fine. Let me actually fix that while I'm thinking about it. I blame Al for his questions taking forever, just so everyone's on the same page here. Done and done. Okay. By the time anyone's done listening to this, it should be working fine. I guess I'll just go clean up the... There we go. Okay. Officially fixed. thanks as always, Kaneki. You are welcome. Sorry for... Well, I guess... I've got another page of questions from Arcane. So, sorry if I was sort of incoherent when talking about design. We don't have a... I feel like this is the sort of thing that I should write a book on, not because I feel like... I have the, like, experience or gravitas required to, for a book that I write to be taken seriously, or, like, even should be taken seriously, but because I feel like we have really shitty language for handling these, like, the, I feel like there's a serious disconnect with just terminology, as far as, like, what design even really means. Like, I sort of consider the... Even with what we were talking about, with sort of the bringing together all of the ideas to, like, build the house, sort of like that, what I call, like, it's... What the designer is basically doing there is doing the, like, the blueprints, right? And then the development stage is actually the really 99% of the work. That's the people actually building your house, right? So, at the end of the day, it's really... not to, you know, talk trash about myself as a designer, because I feel that my design skills are really, like, where I'm at. And it's definitely, like, what I do, right? And obviously, like, I take care of the development stuff, too, but it really, the design is close to my heart. But at the end of the day, it's really the development stuff that's important. Okay, so, a bunch of questions from Arcane. I'm going to go back to that for a second. The reason I was talking about design and development there is because I feel like that's not the way that everyone uses those terminologies, but if you look at the way that everyone uses them, there's so much vagary and overlap that the terms become sort of meaningless. But that's either here or there. Arcane. About how much longer till Old Town is ready to be released for testing by your player base? Just don't even ask. if you have to ask, it's still not coming for a while. Once you've finally given up completely and stopped asking, it'll probably be there pretty soon. And I say that not to actually discourage people from asking. I just don't have useful answers. I'm in the process of sketching out the encounter areas on, like, the design side, like we were just talking about, and making sure that I have all of the art assets in place that I need. But realistically, this is, like, next year, right? Sometime. Probably in the earlier part, but, like, I'm not even going to say that for sure. Partially because I don't honestly know if it's going to be in the early part. Partially because people being like, you didn't meet schedule, makes me want to punch people in the face. Because all that people who do that are doing is screwing over everybody who just wants, like, a faint idea of when it might come out. Because that just means that I won't tell anybody anything, right? Like, why are you being so mean to your other players? Anyway. But I would say probably the early part of next year. But that's not for sure. And that's just a combination of how inspired I feel to do stuff and running into unanticipated snags. The actual process of getting everything done is only, you know, well, when I say it this way, it's kind of depressing, like hundreds of man-hours of work, but the process of, you know, making sure that everything is going to be good and actually, like, both putting the best foot forward on the stuff as it's developed and making sure that it doesn't suck after it's put together, are pretty extensive. And I don't even mean that as testing, just like, a lot of times, like, you put stuff in and then you realize that it's terrible and you have to do it over just the way it is. Depending on how many times I have to do that and how long it takes to get everything together, it could be forever, and that's just the way it is. I would rather not release something than release something that's half-assed. So, if people don't like that, it doesn't have to go, because I'm the only one making the decision. But, at the same time, that means that any estimate time-wise that I give is just basically nonsense, right? The only thing that I can say with absolute certainty is that it will sure as hell not be before Christmas stuff. So it will definitely not be this year. So if you're waiting on pins and needles, get some comfy pins and needles. If I sounded pissed off at you at any point during that, I'm not pissed off at you. It's just scheduling questions are fundamentally flawed at some level. Unless you're asking, when will this not happen? Because that I can usually tell you. I can very rarely say when something actually will happen. So, what do you think about the idea of implementing something for your players to do when they're all out of energy, like a minigame of some sort or something? Probably not. If it has anything to do with the actual game, assuming it's, like, net positive at all, I would have to say definitely no. By which I mean, like, if you get any benefit out of playing the minigame in the actual game. Part of the reason that energy works the way it does is so that, if you're not able to play for, like, giant stretches, you still get your, you know, daily bread is not what I'm looking for there, but you still get your, you know, you still get to play the game on equal footing with everybody else. And one of the, I think, I'm not going to say fatal flaws, but I think one of the giant flaws with the, one of the things that really pisses me off, personally, about traditional MMOs in the EverQuest, World of Warcraft, EVE sort of vein, is that so much of your success is determined by how much time you put into it a day, and that just seems like a really sort of bullshit rubric. And like with like a single player game, you can play through at your own pace and finish it, you know, in 10 hours or whatever. And obviously in Metroplexity, like there's some time constraint as far as like, you know, how much, like how quickly you have to put in your time, but it's not a it sort of tries to strike a middle ground there, I guess, because it does still have to bow to the fact that, you know, there is real time and it does pass, and we do have to, you know, sort of listen to that with stuff like the leaderboards and so forth, because otherwise they would just never end, right? Like, the seasons would just go on literally forever. Because there would always be outstanding runs, if that follows. But the, so I wouldn't want it to be net positive, right? Like, I wouldn't want it to actually help you. And, like, there are totally legitimate ways for it to hurt you in ways that people would still play, by which I mean gambling, right? The tax on people that can't do math. I just don't think it's a particularly good use of development time, unless you have a need for a money sink, basically. And there, that's the sort of thing that I mean, might end up happening at some point. But as a rule, I don't, and I guess there's the third option where, like, it just doesn't matter to the main game at all, at which point, why the fuck am I putting it on my website, right? Like, I would just as soon have, like, oh, it's like, God, what, Bejeweled or whatever it was. It was called like Gems or Jewels or something like that. But the game that you could play in EverQuest, well, EverQuest was so boring that you didn't want to be playing it. That's just depressing. Like, wow. Anyway, so if it didn't have anything to do with the game, I would just put it somewhere else, right? If it had a positive impact on your gameplay, for zero energy, I just would not do it. And if it had a negative impact, that negative impact would have to help the game in some way. By which I mean, like, if we needed, you know, a way to get credits out of the economy or specific items out of the economy or something like that, that would be fine. But I'm not just gonna drop in, like, a, you know, you know, Flash game or something, or, I mean, even, like, you know, a PHP game, to pass the time while you're otherwise not playing. How the rewards work for when Old Town is released, I don't honestly know yet. Will there be separate rewards for how a player does in each category, unique skills, depth, total skills? Oh, you mean when the survivors test ones get called in. There will be a whole series of rewards, a sort of along the lines of what we saw for Slag's finishing. So it will both based on sort of the amount of effort you put in, and separately based on your placing. So, I would, uh, I would expect to see the rewards go in basically the same order that it sorts them. I wouldn't freak out if you drop a depth to get a new unique skills, that sort of thing. I would say go for it. And total skills will be probably a stand-in for the total number of runs, that sort of thing. David, Survivor's Quest is possible. It is possible to kill the King of the Bay, kill the Ocean King, or even both. Do you foresee doing each of these options having an effect further in the game? At least one of those definitely will in Old Town. And it would not surprise me if the other one came back to haunt you. I mean, they're sort of we do these things. One of the scientists in the second floor of the damaged building within the slags leaves the damaged building. Doesn't seem like a very hospitable place, and it sounds like their equipment has gone to shit by now. This isn't represented super well within the game, but the winds and rains of the slags are, I mean, obviously toxic, right? And they are at least somewhat sheltered within the building. Then they've gone a little crazy, but that's at least the original reason that they wanted to stay indoors. Not sure if you'd remember this, but last year I tried hard to find a non-game warfare method of getting some fake Christmas trees peacefully. There wasn't such a method last year. Will there be one this year? I have not fully gone into the design for the Christmas stuff this year. I actually just got all the art that I wanted, so I will be designing that some. As a general rule, I consider gang warfare to be a completely legitimate part of the game. So if there's a solution through gang warfare, I consider that to be a totally legitimate solution within the game. Which isn't to say that I'll be doing the same thing this year. Like I said, I haven't really decided yet, but I've been talking a lot about ancient MMOs this podcast, but if we go back to like old Ultima Online, they had the Felucia and Trammel, I believe the names were, like the sort of halves of the world that, like, there was all the PvP in one half, and all the, you know, not PvP in the other half. I don't really see that as being necessary or good. Which is funny, because I don't actually particularly like PvP myself. But I think that if you're going to have PvP, it has to be integrated in with the world. And as such, there are things that you can only get through PvP that are totally sweet for non-PvP stuff, and vice versa. And if we're not complaining about the vice versa, we can't complain about the game warfare stuff having a meaningful effect. I basically see that it's being two separate options. You either have PvP not matter, or you have PvP be an actual part of the world. And if you're not having it matter, why the fuck is it in your game? So we can easily discard that option, and then basically just say, if one of the things that I've learned doing Metroplexity is that no matter what I do, what options I lay out, people will object to the choices that they have to make doing things that they don't want. The Halloween one, to me at least, was extra hilarious because there were people who were complaining about having to kill the security guards to get to the punch to cleanse it, to like search it for, you know, search it for bad barrels or add Slag's antidote to cleanse them. And part of their complaint was that, well, the other side obviously, you know, wouldn't care because like they're trying to be the bad guys. But I got exactly the same complaint from the other people. From the people who wanted to get in there to, you know, add a clip to the punch. Which, long story short, I've been sort of more or less trained out of really caring if people have qualms about going into certain parts of the game to get certain results. So, if someone wants to, you know, run through as a, you know, non-Eclipse run and they can't get certain things, not really my problem. If someone wants to go through with a, you know, gang warfare run or a non-gang warfare run, can't get certain things, not really my problem. And by not really my problem, I mean that's actually a feature. Like the fact that your choices actually have consequences is sort of the entire point. So, like, the fact that people are complaining to me that their choices have consequences is sort of like, yay. It's like, I can't do everything I want while putting a restriction on my options. Yeah. No, awesome. that's what choices having consequences means. And I don't mean that to be belittling your question about the Christmas trees and the PvP stuff, because I know that we are trained as gamers to expect PvP to have jack all to do with the world, right? And it's like, if you have a game that PvP matters and it is a PvP game. I think Eve is a good example of that. Or like, yeah, like, what is it, Planetfall? The FPS one. And I don't think of Metroplexity as a PvP game, but I think that having PvP but, like, keeping it secluded over here is just weird. So, we don't do that. So, Your question this year might be, I can't get Christmas trees peacefully without taking Eclipse. I don't want to take Eclipse. And it ends up being the same thing to me. So I'm not sure how it'll work out, but let's see. Is there a way to rescue one of the containment suit dudes inside the second iteration of the Charnel House? Don't think so. I mean, they're there for a reason. But I would have to double check the code, but I don't think that there's a way to get them out now. From what I hear, there are skills to be gained pertaining to each survivor's quest, but I don't recall any skills connected to doing Dr. Amundsen's quest. Is there a skill out there from her quest? You have heard incorrectly. What I said is that there are still a bunch of skills to be discovered from the survivor's quests. Not like, they're not parceled out evenly by any means. Like, I don't know the exact numbers offhand, but like, one of them might have 7, and one of them might have 2, and the others might not have anything. It's, the more, the ones that seem less optimal sort of have the skills. So, I mean, at least one skill related to the low line was found. But I would, I mean, Dr. Amundsen's and Hal's are sort of the straightforward ones. They're the ones that people tend to do a lot more. So I would, they're, the, you, any skill that you would get through one of those would be, either a lot harder or a lot more complicated, than one that you'd get from one of these others. Anything special to be uncovered about the antique dueling pistol or cabling nest? Antique dueling pistol. Don't think there's anything special from the pistol. The cabling nest specifically actually isn't fully implemented. That has been waiting there for a long, 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 long time, along with the spherical egg. And one other one. Yeah, doesn't matter. But yeah, there's nothing of great interest. I can't specifically speak to the dueling pistol. I don't think that it has much going on there. Obviously, not all items of metroplexity are going to make sense. I imagine balancing equipment stats to be a tricky process. But I have to wonder, why does the Duranurse have the same melee defense rating as the Shield of Skills? Yeah, I don't. I hate to say that I don't really care, because I do care, but the unearthly items are, balancing unearthly items is a completely different process from balancing any other item in the entire game. So comparing them across is just not a good time. And if I try to, I'll just end up not producing one kind of items or the other, or going utterly insane, gibbering into the night. So, I mean, if the Shield of Scales showed up at the same point in, you know, the main quest line had the same, you know, requirements, to get as the Adorinurse, it, Idor, well, my pronunciation is failing here, Adolu, would be, I mean, it would have better stats, right? But because it shows up effectively first turn, it needs to work differently. And I mean, it's for the same reason that, you know, there are shields which in the game which are way less epic, that will have way, way higher melee defense. So I guess just take heart in the fact that you can't shield block with a nurse, because that would be adorable. Can you do something with the unscathed sketchbook, trotting around for fire defense, turning it into a living sketchbook? Something you've done with a living sketchbook, turning it into a black sketchbook by returning it to the artist? There are some things that key off of some of those, at least one. That's you've identified the main purpose for them, but that's not to say that there aren't a bunch of secondary purposes. Questions from Cryptodynamic. Since it came up recently during Quantum Mechanics baiting, have you ever read the Illuminatus trilogy? If so, what did you think of it? It's one of my favorite books ever. One of my favorite trilogies, I guess, nominally. If you're ever like, I want to understand how Kinnack thinks, read that trilogy and keep reading it until it makes sense, and you'll be pretty close to where I'm at. I hesitate to say that it was a formative book for me, because that makes me sound like a crazy person, but it was a formative book for me. So, let's see. Any chance we'll be seeing Janet again before next Halloween? We had a lovely relationship full of lasers and violence. I would say that there's a decent chance you'll see her. On the topic of Janet, any chance we might eventually be able to learn her Icy Shadows technique? It was painful enough to deal with it. It seems like it would be nice to have. You may already know her Icy Shadows technique. Oh, That's the, I don't know, like, it's a sound effect. not sure what exactly it's a sound effect for, but, yeah. No, it's, yeah, you could be using that right now. Does the chance of learning your egg dodge go down as you learn more from instances of the technique? I started getting it almost every time, but lately I haven't been getting it at all, from either the bum or the Eggman. Most techniques, have some sort of diminishing returns like that. Any hint on just how ancient the ancient notes are? Pretty old. I mean, things don't, actually crumble to dust, when you're handling them very easily. I mean, even if you don't, you know, use acid-free paper. So, yeah. It's, the ancient there is not lying. Just to say it might not be counterfeit like some of the other ancient items you run into. Or, you know, called up from some sort of external dreaming world. However that actually ends up working. In the sense that, you know, there's a lot of ancient stuff on the ghost ship that is either not at all ancient, but looks it, or is pulled from somewhere where it's been hiding for a while. Question from Exgive, who confiscated all the projectors we made for Halloween? There's not been any explicit comment on what happened to any of the projectors. They might be sitting down there cooking. Or they might have all wandered off with Janet. You know, one of the two. Some of the questions from Magnifico, or Meg, I just like saying Magnifico, which I think I say every time I get a question from Magnifico. Do you ever sit down and play through a complete run? How fast do you go? I will occasionally, not really very often. It's usually more like spot testing stuff. This probably totally broke stuff. Honestly, I don't really have, this is going to sound terrible, but I don't really have much time to play games, my own included. Or really, honestly, a ton of interest. It's just like, I like the game, and I think it's a good game, but it's just sort of, I'm not even really sure how to explain it. Like, it's not like you don't enjoy eating your own cooking, right? But it's just a sort of, there's no sense of discovery. Most of the time when I do full runs through, it's, you know, in Cheaty McCheaterson mode, where I just, you know, give myself more body and hunger and energy to test through whatever I'm going through, that sort of thing. Is the fast cheaty way to get trauma tech as much of a shortcut as the fast cheaty way to get quantum mechanics? Depends how you measure the speed. Is the way to do it so non-linear? Are there any other skills that have fast cheaty ways to get them? This is going to be completely unhelpful. It is way less non-linear, but I think that you're even less likely to find it. It's the sort of thing, sort of what we were talking about with PvP a second ago, how, like, as, there's sort of a way that we're trained as gamers to expect things to work, because it's just sort of how it's always been done, usually because, like, that's just the easy way to do it. It's not worth the effort to do it any other way. I'm not really a big believer in doing things the easy way when they could be done the right way. Sometimes you just can't, right? But if it's possible and it's not like a billion hours of effort, I'll do things the right way. But the, quote, right way to get trauma tech is not something I think that people would ever expect to actually work. Any other skills that are fast, cheaty ways to get them? Well, I mean, some of them have cheaty ways to get them at all. I mean, you know, most of the undiscovered ones aren't terribly obvious. There's some other things that have pretty non-linear or cheaty ways to get them, but most of the skills, for the most part, are well-defined, how to get them. Having arguments against skill premium made you think twice about putting it in eventually? I mean, I've put some more thought into it. It's an interesting sort of question. I don't feel like... I've never felt like just getting an increasingly large list of skills that you take into every run with you is necessarily good for the game. In the same way that... if you could equip all of the weapons that you got throughout a run at once, things would go pear-shaped pretty quickly. Part of the balancing factor for for anything that you accumulate, you know, different versions of, really has to be that they conflict, right? That there's a mutual exclusivity. And so... the question is really how that'll work out. Whether it'll be the sort of thing like some sort of seasonal run equivalent, where like all of the skills that you have acquired that are on, you know, the list for this season you get, or if it'll be something like you know, choose a skill from, you know, each of these groups, or like choose 5 skills from this list or whatever, right? So, yeah. That's sort of the direction I'm going with that. I don't think there won't be a way to perm to keep skills, because it is sort of in the game's DNA, so to speak. But exactly how that'll play out isn't something that I have to decide for quite a while. Shaman staff and its derivatives seem to give XP in exchange for body, but if you use that body instead on drugs to give energy, you could generally gain much more XP from fights or playing around with the antique mirror or something. As the apparent underwhelmingness of these drugs and tantalizing mentions of remembering past lives through the use text, an indication that we should spade harder or do or save XP gains look better from your perspective than where I'm sitting. I mean, yes to everything. I'm not going to get into a fight about whether they need to be buffed. I just don't really give a shit. And, I mean, that's harsh, but some stuff's not going to be very good. Some stuff's going to be way better. And if I buffed everything that people were like, oh, energy is... getting pure energy is way better than this, that's actually... I'm not going to say it's a bullshit argument, exactly, because a lot of times, you know, it is legitimately, you know, you can get more XP, but, frankly, if I balanced everything so that people liked it as much as energy, shit would be really, really busted. Because, people fucking love energy. Like, that's the way the game is supposed to work. I'm not saying this like, you know, people are weird or something, right? But because like, energy is the main, you know, constraint for this stuff, being able to get more energy is just more, you know, psychologically satisfying, right? And at the point where the other drugs were as satisfying, they would do really weird things to the actual balance of the game. So I'm not real interested in getting into that argument on anything. It's just not my idea of a good time. And I really don't want to open the door to people having that argument or using that argument, because I don't want to tell people to go fuck themselves. I will if I have to, but it's just, it's not my good time. Safe XP gains are, I think, do have some value. I could probably add more XP to them and they wouldn't be broken, but I could have it give many times the XP that you could get from that amount of energy, and people still wouldn't actually like them. I apologize if that all seemed really harsh, but I really, really don't like getting into that conversation. So I'd like to discourage it as much as possible. I guess I'm just not really interested in that comparison, at all. If they seem underwhelming to you, they're underwhelming to you, don't use them. And if they are actually underwhelming compared to other drug-related ways of getting energy that should be comparable, like the introspection buffs and things like that, which they very easily might be, then I might have to do something about them. But I'm comparing energy to anything else is a fool's errand, and I'm just not going to go down that path. But if you want to have this conversation again, comparing them to something that's actually comparable, so like the do safe XP gains look better from your perspective than from where I'm sitting, if you want to actually compare it to something that is not perspectively totally weird like energy is, we can have a legit conversation about this. I still probably won't do anything with it, but just so we're on the same page, I'm not going there. Was it a deliberate design decision to have some of the bonuses from using Elegant Tone and Pants only show up in the bonuses page, or was it mostly a coding issue? In the latter case, is that something you've managed to find a way around? I should actually probably. In the latter case, is that something you've... The first question is, was that mostly a coding issue? It is... It's not really a coding issue in the sense that I don't like displaying bonuses... It was a design issue rather than a coding issue. I can code it to work either way, or both ways, or many ways. But I don't... I don't feel like there's a great way to... if we had on, like, the patches for the pants, like, oh, and it's giving you, plus one melee power now, or what have you. That becomes very misleading, when the other buff fades. So you have to say, interactions with other effects, granting you plus one melee, and it's like, well, and then that doesn't actually, so I just don't really like... I don't think that there's a really good way to display that other than having it be actually just on your character as that works out. So the reason that a reflection from the path before you changes dynamically is because it's not that, right? Like, it's actually that item grants you, the benefit directly, and just that item, and it'll So it can afford to update like that because it's not on anything that you can break down, really. So it's not like you need the item equipped and a buff, right? Then the buff might wear off. It's just you have the item. So, in either case, any hints on where else besides the pants and achromatic gear we might find similar, almost hidden bonuses? There are about half a dozen places scattered around that grant stuff like that. Going back quite a while. So, there's a couple of different ways that the game handles item sets and, like, buff sets. And some of those are obviously, like, the containment suit, right? But there are... That's where I would start to look, right? With item sets and that sort of thing. Do any of the other unfound skills have other skills as prerequisites? Or for that matter, do any of them have lack of certain other skills as prerequisites? Vassal of the Seas style. They don't, it's gonna sound, this is totally nitpicking, but because the game is sort of designed assuming that we'll eventually have permed skills, no skill actually looks, directly at another skill for the prerequisite. It'll be something like, you have, getting that skill will set a flag sort of thing. Like, you've completed the quest, and gotten the skill, and so it won't look for the other skills. Which is to say that if you went into a quest with one of the... It doesn't actually matter. if that was comprehensible, it was comprehensible. In practice, it's the same thing, so I should stop talking. Any of the unfound skills? At least one of them can be turned off. At least two of them are mutually exclusive with other skills you've already found. Not necessarily in the exact sense you're talking about, but like different options, requests, things like that. A bunch of the others are actually in, like, there's an entire, there's at least one, like, quest-like group, that hasn't been found. So, some of them are mutually exclusive with ones that you haven't actually found yet. So that kind of works out. Now that you're on both of the game featuring Eclipse and Twilight Heroes, are you worried that you'll see cease and desist order from Stephanie Meyer's lawyers? I've actually... I got a note from... Cafe Press, not too long ago, telling me that I needed to update my tags on, various loot over there to... say, Eclipse movie rather than just Eclipse, and directing me to their Twilight, fan policy. I sent them a very nice email that was basically like, I don't really like, I will cheerfully leave, but I will most assuredly not abide by your Twilight fan policy, because fuck Twilight. And so that's, and they were very nice about it. It didn't end up being a big deal. They just did like, everyone who has something tagged Eclipse send them an email, telling them to follow the Twilight fan policy. But, there are just a couple of funny things, in that. Talking to lawyers for the paperwork to do the actual exchange for Twilight Heroes, because you want some stuff on paper. The lady that I was working with, who's like you know, professional, like, middle-aged woman, like, you know, full-on partner in a law firm. It's like, oh, like, the book's Twilight or something else? And I was like, no, not the book's Twilight. She's like, aw. It's like, okay. Like, I'm not really sure how to take that, but apparently her daughter made her start reading them. She decided they were good for reasons that I can't comprehend, but that's fine. And I guess as long as people are reading, I don't have too much to complain about. It's actually okay. I'm going to go off on a totally random tangent here. I think it's really interesting. The construction of a protagonist for... There's sort of like... I'm not going to say there are two kinds of protagonists, but, you know, there are two kinds of protagonists. There are protagonists that actually have, like, their own character, right? And there are protagonists that really you're just supposed to project yourself onto. And Twilight obviously has the latter, but... No, I'm not saying that in a derogatory manner. Like I think that Myers actually does an incredibly good job at that. Something that's I think irritating, obviously, sort of laudable in a, you know, like, Facebook is evil, but they are so evil, sort of sense. But I just think that that's kind of interesting. I mean, it's the same sort of thing that you get with like. Any Nintendo character, basically. But, like, Link is the one that I'm really thinking of there. Like, who's... All of the sort of silent protagonists. Because who doesn't want to be Link? I was looking through the old dev blog post, looking for some clues to unspaced content recently, and I realized I missed those old bug fix feature roundups. And, of course, the shoutouts to TypoFinders. I know you do the podcast now, and I wouldn't want it to take time away from actual development, but do you think you might be able to do this occasionally? It's fun to look at the dev blog and see how the game's growing and evolving. I've actually, I completely dropped the ball on those while we were working on Halloween. I, actually was considering doing, one of those, earlier today. Much of the information would be, out of date or incorrect. But at least I could get one of those up and start the list up again. So, I guess, since someone obviously appreciates them, I will go ahead and do that. And, we'll go from there. A couple questions from Deftian. Assuming I'm pronouncing that correctly, I'm not sure if you're a first-time question asker, in which case, welcome. Otherwise, welcome anyway. Ever plan on implementing some dance move attacks techniques? I think... I mean, it wouldn't entirely surprise me. I would imagine that that would be more likely as, like, an unearthly item or something like that, than, like, integrated into the game proper. I would be surprised if at some point you didn't run into, some sort of similar, chaining... techniques on more of a martial arts vein, like the I mean, when you talk about dance moves, I don't know if you play Game of Loathing at all, but they're the dance moves in that game sort of chain together into dances to have certain effects. If there was something like that, it would probably be more along the lines of martial arts, just etheric craziness. Heaven knows there isn't enough etheric craziness in the game. Do you keep note of everything that we haven't found? Not well, I mean, there are certain things that, I sort of nominally, keep track of, and occasionally someone will find something and it'll get up on the wiki and I just won't notice, the hacking bonuses from... The bonus tools from the Midgard player got up on the wiki. And I just didn't notice at all. Are you going to make a small new thing appear every day in December, advent calendar style? I would be very surprised if I managed to do that. The way that I tend to develop content, it's always so integrated in with everything else that dropping little new things tends to sort of blow up out of proportion. And when, I mean, I guess I could, like, save up all year to have, like, a bunch of tiny things to do. But usually when I have something tiny, I just put it in. Like, the last thing I'm actually thinking of that was tiny was the can of green beans that drops from some of the enemies in Southside now. But that was from forever ago. I'm sure there are better examples, I'm just not remembering. But there will be cool stuff for Christmas. I got some new art, some of which is terrifying, some of which is adorable, and some of which is just fucking awesome. It's really been a treat, working on Metroplexity, watching, Puyo, who's a friend of mine who does all of our art, but she's, you know, I've known her for quite a while, but watching her art really progress, like, when I was putting in, the new enemy in the South Side, I think I ended up calling him Filthy Bum, but Dirty Bum, Filthy Bum, whatever he ended up being. And looking at you know, the art sort of around him and being like, wow, like, I almost, like, I'm not sure if I should put this in here because it looks, or makes the rest of it look kind of bad. So, at some point, we're going to go through, I'm sure, and do an art revamp. Actually, consider that as sort of a open offer to folks listening. If there's a piece of art that just, like, does not strike your fancy, definitely go ahead and let me know. And it'll take a bit, always. I mean, I'll put it in the next art request, and those are, like, usually every 2 weeks, and then, like, 2 weeks for Puyo to get it back to me, and then, you know, I have to track down where it was supposed to go and put it in, stuff like that. But, like, the new pile of crates art was, because somebody, didn't like the existing art, so, I've been looking at all of them for so long that it's a little weird, they're just sort of, you know, not even really, like, images anymore, right? They're just symbols, and so I have a hard time telling which, if any of them are not up to the, you know, the cut of the rest of the art anymore. So yeah, if you have one that bugs you, let me know. Who's your favorite NPC? That's a good question. I mean, I really enjoy writing Zach's monthly notes, just explaining how he got the item and, like, what sort of terrible path of destruction it left behind it. That's always a good time. But I don't obviously get to write a ton of stuff for the Vigilante, but I really enjoy doing that. There's some other people who you haven't met yet, too. Like, my actual favorite. You probably won't meet for, like, another 3 quests. You've had some foreshadowing, I guess. But of the people that are already in-game, like the contacts, I would actually be really tempted to say Zach, or possibly Low is not, like, quite a me insert, but, like, I enjoy having a character in the game who, although, like, obviously he's in over his head, like, and his normal, his normal approaches aren't working very well, like, keeps a fairly level head about him and, like, tries to apply the scientific method and, like, is not a complete loser. And he's, I don't know, it's just, like, I guess it's probably not a coincidence, but I use him for the Twitter feed. Yeah, let's go with Low. just a good guy. So you can replay that if he ends up terribly, you know, betraying you in the end. Which, he probably won't terribly betray you in the end, but, you know, keeping my options open. Animals mainly come from items, or they seem to be robots. They come as small birds and fish. They come in monster flavors, being etheric. Wildlife still exists outside of the Metroplex. Is there illegal, non-illegal animal testing? There are definitely, I mean, most the areas you've been in Metroplex are very, very, very urban, and are surrounded by more urbanness, except for the Slags, which, you know, has its own set of problems. Not really any normal wildlife to speak of, for obvious reasons. But most of the wildlife you'll run into is of the, you know, rat, not even really crows, but like pigeons. You know, there's still some fish in the water, but they're not necessarily the best thing in the world to be eating. Stuff like that. I have not really included any, like, feral dogs or cats, which is sort of an interesting oversight on my part. I think probably mostly because they... How do you explain this? People feel way worse killing animals than they do about killing people, typically. And I have no idea why that is, but I think it's awesome. You notice it the most in kids, but I think adults do it to a large extent, too. Admittedly, you know, the rat is pretty adorable, but... there are, when I get pets in eventually, which is not something that's on the immediate radar, it's just sort of been on a back burner for like a couple of years now, you'll get to run into some cats and dogs, but, I almost feel like a moral obligation to put in, feral cats and dogs now, but, those also definitely are, like, within the city. But yeah, that's... to answer the question about outside of Metroplex, there is... The land is not... most of the areas around Metroplex, and even, like... globally, pretty much anything that's remotely arable is being farmed. So the types of wildlife that you'll see are wildlife that does well with farming. So you will get, like, you know, all the rodents that go along with that, the birds, and also still, like, you know, birds of prey and stuff like that. But you would be a little more hard-pressed to find, you know, deer and so forth, although they're like giant rats with horns, so I'm sure they're still around somewhere. Probably still plaguing Wisconsin, as they are wont to, and that sort of thing, but I would just on like on a planet-wide scale, I would say that there's a pretty serious loss of biodiversity, like most of the, well, on a macro level, just because they, we always forget to include the bacteria and stuff, and I'm sure they're doing fine, and the insects and so forth. Probably making exciting new species of insects with all their pesticides. But the larger animals, the sort of charismatic macrofauna, are, I would imagine, have, for the most part, lost their battles with extinction. On the bright side, technology is to the point where if, you know, you need a Bengal tiger for some purpose, you could pretty easily grow one in a lab, that sort of thing. And cloning is definitely on the proverbial table. So, that's... I mean... So, a lot of stuff that's extinct is not necessarily gone. It's just gone from the wild, I guess, would be the way to say that. I talk about a little bit in the Cloak of Feathers description, I think. And there's a few other places that shows up, but... there's a fair amount of chimerization and genetic testing and things like that. Is there illegal, non-illegal animal testing? Quite a bit, yeah. I mean, even with the situation in Metroplex being as it is, with like Southside and so forth, it's still easier to do the early stages of testing on animals and the sort of just general corporate control, has extended animal testing to a pretty serious extent. It's one of those things where it's not so much that, it's held within, it's held away from cartoonishly evil limits only because, there's just a certain point after which testing on animals doesn't do you very much good, right? And there's less requirement for testing. With a lot of the animal testing that occurs now is, I mean, obviously, you know, the FDA doesn't want them, you know, to skip straight to human testing, assuming you're in the States. Local equivalents, I'm sure, all around, but Food and Drug Administration here in the States doesn't want them testing on people, so they test on animals, which obviously is, moral arguments aside, just like for people's safety is better than not testing it at all, right? When you're looking at a place like Metroplex, Midgard they're not really in like the pharmaceuticals, which makes the whole Eclipse thing a little weird, but that's a story for another time. They won't have to do much testing at all. So they would either just start pumping it out and selling it to people, or if they actually wanted to figure stuff out, they would do some combination of human or animal testing at their leisure, right? There's less... but not because of, like, increasingly stringent regulations or anything like that. It still pisses people off, like the protest on the Quad is related to that. But it's something that's going pretty strong. A couple questions from Voles. The new recordings have led to a lot of discussion about the nature of game warfare. Opinion in chat is varied. Is the level of effort required to join PvP acceptable? Should we be encouraging people to start their own gangs, or is that futile until the game gets a larger player base? We haven't reached a consensus or anything, really, so I'll just ask your thoughts you might have on that subject. I think that... I have a lot of trouble with... I mean, there's sort of a set of concerns, right, for, is PvP balanced, is it not balanced, is anything balanced, is really, in the whole game, and that because there are so many, like, little chunks of content that would change that calculus undiscovered, it's not really something that I can... I don't think anyone can really speak too authoritatively, like, what it's like. There are definitely things which are not discovered that would affect that, that would affect, you know, the sort of the balance of power and how, like, much effort it takes and things like that. Yeah, I don't think anyone can speak authoritatively to it. But, what I was trying to do, and I think that this is, well, I guess there are two things. The mechanic, which I think has been at least partially spaded, but I won't say it in case it hasn't. The mechanic behind the neural recordings is actually just the intended mechanic for higher-end neural recordings, giving experience. And I think as that gets figured out, or has been figured out, it'll make a lot of sense. Just neural recordings being what they are, and XP being what it is, it's sort of like, oh, yeah, no, that totally makes sense. I mean, obviously those got rolled out now, because there were some problems. I don't really mind there being a fairly high barrier to entry getting into PvP. Having that repeat every time, you know, you drop out to do, you know, a reset or something is, I think, actually a larger problem. That's why that was released at that juncture, so to speak. I don't know if it works, but putting that out there into the wild, early, sort of, give you a little taste of high-end neural recordings to come. I think, as far as level of effort, I would expect to see most or all of that be aimed towards people getting back into PvP, because I don't have a lot of problems with it the first time. It might end up helping them too. Like, it's just not something that I think is, it's just not something that I really think is a huge issue one way or another. I mean, there's a certain level after which it's pretty ridiculous, but I don't think we're honestly there. Should we be encouraging people to start their own gangs, or is that futile until the game gets a larger player base? It really depends what they want. As far as starting their own gangs, if you enjoy PvP, if you enjoy gang warfare, and aren't just in it for, like, you know, the loots, the more gangs, the better. It's just, you know, the way it is, right? That's just math. In the sense that, you know, there will be more gang warfare and more PvP. I'm not sure as far as, like, functionality, what the, you know, optimal level of people in a gang is. They don't really have to be very large, though. I mean, there's a fairly substantial amount of effort to put through to get, you know, your gang have all of its proverbial shit together. That's really a one-time cost for the most part. Well, you know, three-time cost. That's sort of where that goes. I'm not sure. I personally wouldn't advise, you know, starting, you know, one person gangs or something like that, but like 3, 5, 10 people should be fine. That's a pretty sizable number of gangs that it would be. Would be able to support, but it really just depends on what people want out of the game warfare system. One huge first magician that seems to be absent in Metroplex U is sports. Is there a football field, underwater competitive eating pool, or Dino Chess Arena hidden near campus somewhere? There is probably sporting slash athletic facilities, yeah. Which could give us some holidays, which might be worthwhile. but it's sort of funny, the where I'm in Columbus, Ohio now, right? So we're in Buckeye country, so to speak. So OSU here is before we moved the apartment we were in, if we had our windows open on game day, we could hear the people cheering. Which isn't to say that we're close. It's just really loud. And now we're across the street, so we can't anymore, which is probably for the best. But like entire chunks of the city will go on lockdown. Really during the game. Before the game and after the game. So if you want to do anything that day, you either go like several hours before the game or during the game, which actually works out really well, or several hours after the game. And you just avoid bars. So that's the that's sort of where we're at now, but the undergrad that Liz and I went to, they had only good thing they ever did, as far as I can figure out. They tore down their football field to build a new science building, which is pretty badass. And they still didn't have a football field when we were there. Still had the science building, though. But, of course, instead of being all about football, they were all about basketball. So it ended up sort of moving 10 degrees to the left. So it's not something that I actually... Because of my undergrad, it's just not something I think about very much. Metroplex U is very much modeled to a large extent off of my undergrad in some weird sorts of ways. Obviously, like, we didn't have, you know, a giant Halloween party every year where, like, people may or may not be slaughtered. But some of them are just, you know, resonant chords for anyone who's been to college, like, holy balls, everything in the bookstore is way too expensive. That's just sort of the nature of college bookstores, right? That's their, the platonic ideal of college bookstores, like the $20 candy bar. Just some of the other arrangements. If anyone's curious, like, the average student of my undergrad, you're basically looking at Chuck, pre being all like going to Utgard for a year. So just sort of like, you know, careful, we gotta pop our collars here. This is frat country. So, are there any plans for meeting more professors? The guy who teaches Node Poetry could probably provide some lighthearted content. this is going to sound really, really dumb. It's sort of challenging. I just feel really, really stupid adding more doctors or professors just because, like, the contact list, if you have everyone, is like, you know, like, yeah, some people, and then just like, doctors! Some people, and I mean, we only have Professor Evans, but he's, well, yeah, mainly listed as the professor because doctors! And then, you know, the rest. So, like, we might just have to start calling them, you know, Mr. Blah, or like, first and last name, or something, because it's kind of ridiculous. Or maybe you'll need some TAs. I wouldn't expect to spend a lot more time on campus in the main quest line until towards the end. Like, there's sort of like, you know, you go through, you know, Southside Docks, University, Slags, and then Survivors is sort of ties things. I'm not going to say, like, repeats exactly. Because the numbers are a little different, but that sort of, like, structure happens again. So, like, right before the end, there's a sort of, there's likely to be another tying together stage. Don't remember how often this has been mentioned, but a count command would be a godsend. I fairly regularly skip choice encounters, because I don't remember if I have enough of a particular item to spare. Nobody, to my knowledge, has asked that before, so... I don't know how often it's been mentioned. So, zero or few. I could probably do that. Shouldn't be a huge issue. Sort of annoying to code, but not the end of the world. I'm sorry if I brought this up before, but what is the status of religion in the setting? We got the blind Legion of the Third Eye, who seemed to practice pretty marginal religious activity, but there's no sign of the more mainstream religions, despite all predictions about its decline, turning out to be completely false up through 2011, at least. Is this intentional setting design, avoidance of a controversial subject, or just one of the multitude of objects you haven't had time to address yet? It's... This is going to sound a little weird. I just don't think that it actually has that much effect in the settings. Well, like you know, going about your day-to-day life, like, the question of what religion someone is just usually doesn't matter, right? I mean, like, you've got your crazy cultists, who I think are relatively well represented here. But like, yeah, you know, you're Episcopal, you're Catholic, you're Jewish, you're Muslim, you're Hindu, you're, you know, Buddhist. I probably already said Jewish, but Jewish again. I guess unless they're Orthodox, and then you can just, like, tell by looking at them. Or at least if they're really Orthodox. Very Orthodox would probably be a better way to say that. It's like, you're just not Orthodox enough. You know, Amish. Identifiable. That sort of thing. But, like, as far as... wouldn't hurt to have a couple dudes in turbans. But that's not here or there. But I just, like... It's like... So, I mean... Aside from, like, the fact that, you know, God is still part of people's vocabulary, it just doesn't really... I mean, even now, it just doesn't matter very much. So, what you will... there are things that you will... So, I guess, until religion intrudes on the main quest line, or, like, you know, in the areas that you're in, it's just not gonna... Not going to really come up. So, like, that's not to say that I don't feel like I'm really avoiding it. It just isn't really a huge deal. I mean, the setting is nominally, you know, U.S. or Western Europe. So, like, nominally everyone you meet is probably some flavor of Christian, right? You've got, I mean, there's probably a fair number of, you know, maybe Mikhail's Russian Orthodox, maybe he's Catholic, maybe he's a Lutheran, I don't know, I don't think there are many Russian Lutherans, but I could very easily be wrong. So, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. I sort of see Mikhail as probably being, like, a religious dude, but, like, not a thing, really, right? So, I... I'm chuckling to myself because when it does come up, it probably won't come across as super friendly, because if it comes up, it's probably because, I mean, either, you know, they're crazy enough to be noticeable, and, I mean, sorry to, you know, the Orthodox Jews and the Amish and whatnot, but, like, If your religion is off, and a lot of people who wear giant crosses, let's be fair, people who wear, and the turban's kind of a cultural thing, people say that's religious too, whatever. If it shows up in your art, like, that means you're pretty, you know, if I have to mention your religion in the art request that I send to Puyo, means you're pretty out there. So, you know, those people, are obviously religious in various ways. And then, you know, when you run into I mean, I think it's safe to say at some point you will run into the effects that Eclipse would have on a very religious person, which I think is very interesting, and I will enjoy exploring. It might end up coming across as totally disrespectful. I don't really care very much. It won't be more disrespectful than I'm being to corporations and, police, right? So, people might get bent out of shape about it, but... Yeah. There's that. But it would not surprise me if it came up, in a broader sense. But if you're running into if somebody's religion actually matters to the plot, it's probably because they're a whack job, right? So, I don't... Maybe I'll put in a food kitchen or something to balance it out. Because I don't... Despite the fact that I'm a giant atheist, most of you listening to this probably know. But... is my thing that I'm an atheist. I understand that most religious people are fine. It's just for plot purposes, right? It's like most of the people who work at Midgard are fine, right? They're just people going and pulling down paychecks, right? It's just really the douchebags that you end up having to deal with. Otherwise get sucked into the main plot, the survivors. because that's sort of religion's sort of off to the side. If they're coming in, it's going to be pretty obvious. You soonish, maybe even before Christmas, you might get a little more about the Blind Legion, but that's obviously not what the question is. But I would say most of the people in Metroplex are nominally Christian, at least culturally Christian. You don't get, I was gonna say candles for your menorah, but the idea of hanging little ornaments off your menorah is kind of adorable too, so we'll take it. Is there a reason the Wandering Student says Z's? He drops caster capsule into your hand? If so, are there clues in the game that allow players to guess the reason? Why the Z? I think you could piece together nominally what he's talking about. It's not anything so mysterious as some of the Midgard single letter things, but you'll run into that at some point in the distant future. Get a better answer. Language and imagination creating reality is clearly a major theme in Metroplexity, as it is in a variety of traditions. Were you influenced by any of these traditions in particular? Thinking of a lot of novels written by authors who lived in communist states, as well as the South American tradition of, I'm going to mispronounce some of these, Borgia, Marquis, etc., and even approaches to European fairy tales by people like Terry Pratchett. I don't think I've honestly read any of those. I guess I have technically read Terry Pratchett, but I've only read Good Omens. That he did with... Wow. I'm failing with name right now. Terry Pratchett. Neil Gaiman. There we go. Which, by the way, is one of the best books ever. And everyone should read it, and it's fabulous. But that's the only Terry Pratchett I've ever read. And aside from old Russian novels, which are basically... I'm not going to say basically unreadable, but the sort of things that I would only read if I was interested in them, rather than, because they were assigned reading. And I don't think I've... Well, I certainly haven't read anything from either of the South American authors that you mentioned. As far as language and stuff creating reality, drawn more from... personal philosophical meanderings. I've had Well, so when I was like 7 or 8, I was just a very introspective kid, I think is the extent of my excuse there. So I spent like a day-ish thinking about really just like how reality is put together and how we interface with reality. And the fundamental answer there, I think, is really just that, our consciousness is, I'm not saying, our soul or our spirit or anything, but, the whatever that ends up being, but whatever self-reflexive part that we have, right, whatever, cogito ergo sum part we have, is perceiving reality through a set of, just a set of filters, right, like both physical and neurological and mental, but that really at the end of the day, you can only say, you can't say anything useful about reality without describing those filters, right? Like you can say useful things about reality and those filters, but nothing about reality alone, or really even the filters alone, right? They're just glommed together. So that just sort of general approach to subjective reality, in addition to serving me very well when I learned about general relativity and quantum mechanics, it has just sort of formed the basis of my personal, sort of approach to things. That's sort of the explorations of that formed. One of the questions I think that Eclipse poses, that everyone, including Midgard, is trying to figure out is what's really going on there? Like, what are you actually joining into a shared experience, into like an effectively another reality? Are you, just hallucinating things, basically, adding another filter? Like, what's going on there, and how do we tell the difference? Is there a difference? Which I think is an interesting set of questions, something that I sort of try to explore a little bit, give you at least enough information to, see the effects of Eclipse on other people and how it plays out, through technological lenses and things like that. One of the reasons you can get the videos in the Survivor's Quest, in Hell's Branch of the Survivor's Quest, is just that I think it's really, what's a pure sort of insentient, non-sentient, I guess would be the better way to say that, view of these events, like what's going on. I'm not really inspired by any of this. Just a long convoluted train of thought. It also is the key to the magic system, in system, which I was talking about, sort of a belief is reality, more or less. Well, not even quite is reality, like belief changes how we're able to interface with reality, might be the better way to put that. It was based, the whole magic system was built around religions and philosophies and things like that. and how they and how those worldviews separated you from the normal as you believed in them more and more strongly. With the obvious question being, like, you know, are you just crazy, or are you actually, you know, changing things? And with the mechanism being that you're changing things, like, how do other people see that? Like, who understands that this is just, like, your beliefs? Like, can you just change your beliefs, like, to change how you're affecting this? It's an interesting set of questions. I think one of the neater parts of RuneQuest, Glorantha, which is an old RPG, Mongoose, I think, just lost the rights to it again. Well, like, didn't, like, lose them, like, had them expire. They were doing it for a while, but it was also under Cassium for a bit. And Asarius Inc., maybe a couple of other companies even. But part of their basic idea was that every legend sort of had, like, left its mark on reality. But there was a group, so, like, the legends of the gods and so forth basically formed the underpinnings of reality, right? But it was actually those legends, right? Like, not, they were never, they were events outside of time, in the dream time, basically. But there was a group of thinkers called God learners, God teachers, something like that, God speakers, maybe, doesn't matter. But these philosophers basically had figured that out, and so they actually went into the dream time, basically, and changed those legends through, you know, great, you know, risk and peril, etc., to, like, do things like disempower gods they didn't like, and, like, change the basic underpinnings of reality. And, of course, we're, you know, complete badasses. Because, you know, when you can rewrite the basic underpinnings of reality, first thing you probably want to do is to make yourself a complete badass. But, yeah, no, it's just sort of an interesting set of thoughts. To the extent that I think those questions can be answered, in relation to, particularly Eclipse, but, I mean, sort of almost a, I don't want to say, you know, it's a metaphorical, you know, parable or whatever, but, you know, to the extent that the questions of what, how subjectivity can be extracted from reality, things like that, will, you know, be explored by not just, like, the setting existing as it is, but it's also a question that people in the setting really want to have answered, because if you can, you know, if like, you know, the third eye can figure out how to control etheric manifestations, and it's possible they can on higher levels, but, you know, like, Hawk can't. Or, like, the Third Eye Sorcerers, probably a better example, you know, in the Asylum, aren't capable of doing much more with Eclipse than you are, right? They've got a couple of tricks up their sleeves, but nothing super exciting, right? Nothing different in type from what you can do. Nothing as qualitatively differently is the word I'm looking for there. But if they could actually change, like, really deeply control what they're manifesting, like, that would be a different beast entirely, right? Like, you could, if, you know, they're calling on the hounds, if they could call on anything coming out of their wildest imaginings, that's a different story. And, like, there are people who seem to be doing something similar to that. So, like, what the fuck's going on there? well, those are sort of, I think, just sort of setting the issue of subjective reality aside, as if we could, I think really the difference to a large extent between, I'm not even going to say the difference. One of the keys to in my opinion, of making a game with a good setting, or a novel with a good setting, or, you know, a campaign for D&D with a good setting, is having the people in the setting actually think about stuff and, like, try to figure shit out. To the extent that, you know, it's appropriate, right? And that's another important part, but, I mean, you as the players are not the only ones who are curious about a lot of these things, right? You know, like, where do the hounds come from, right? They seem pretty ubiquitous, and that's a little weird. They work a little bit differently than, like, than the spiders do. And what's exactly going on there? You know, the visions and the orb. And obviously, like, you're getting fragments of a larger image, but other people within the setting, like the Third Eye, people who work for Midgard, you know, people you haven't met yet who work higher up in Midgard, are all getting different. Oh, and like, you know, like David and Hal, Dr. Amundsen, hello. Everybody's getting different bits, right? Different fragments of the puzzle, different pieces, and there. Everybody's trying to put them together and figure out more or less what the fuck is going on. And I think that's really important to making a good setting. But also I think really is what drives a lot of the story, like the Slag's Lab, where they're, you know, even better example, actually, the lab in Southside, where they're, you know, experimenting on people. They're not experimenting on people because, you know, they're a big evil corporation. That's what big evil corporations have to do to drive the story. They're experimenting on people because they want to figure out what's going on, how this makes stuff tick. And their individual people have both different understandings and sometimes, you know, have been lied to. I think that comes up in at least one of the recordings. You know, they think that they're doing something different than what, you know, Midgard is actually having them do. And, you know, they're trying to put that together individually, and they're feeding data, you know, up the chain of command, and those people are trying to put it together from the, you know, pieces that are being handed up, which may not even be, you know, like, doctor who's being lied to is handing the information up. He may not know to give them the right pieces, you know, things, all these sorts of, these interrelated bits of knowledge on people moving through. It's really important for the setting that there is that sort of consistency. Midgard is big, and chunks of it are evil, chunks of it are not evil, chunks of it are totally fine, or even, like, startling examples of humanity, I'm sure. I would not expect probably to meet too many of those, but it's been known to happen. Obviously, like, you know, even back when they were working for Midgard, Lo and Baldur and Dr. Amundsen and Howell were all fine. Or at least not particularly more evil, or less evil. A little less crazy, in at least one case, but you'll have that. Just this sort of underlying truth that everybody that you deal with, I mean, you know, I don't stay up at night, you know, racking my brain for, like, you know, why is Fang member number, you know, 287 attacking the player right here? But it's like, oh, you know, like, there's a reason that they're there. There's a reason that they're, you know, attacking people. probably a reason that they're attacking you specifically. So, yeah, there's a lot going on. And I plan to keep it that way. But I think it's important to have that sort of even, like, you know, the bit players have their motivations. I think that's important to make a compelling world. And as important as motivations have their own sets of information, particularly when we're talking about something like this, we're basically, like, everyone's trying to unravel a big, like, what the fuck. I suppose normal people call those mysteries. I guess I've talked as long as I humanly can, and luckily I'm out of questions. So, thanks for listening, and thanks for playing and donating and posting in the forums and playing again. Because I'm pretty sure I already thank you for playing, but it's important, so thank you. Recording bugs and so forth. I will. We'll be looking forward to the Christmas content coming in. It shouldn't be, you know, a huge, convoluted, involved thing like Halloween, but I think it'll be fun. I like to keep Christmas a little bit lighter, not necessarily, you know, light, dark, good, bad sense, but in the effervescent, sort of like not as heavy sense. There we go. But yeah. Thanks again, and have a good one.